Well, I think I said something last time that we might preach on heaven, or that's not happening. We're going to preach on something else tonight, but this church is to be commended, and I want to tell you that when you support a pastor full time, then you get a full plate on Sunday. If you don't support one full time, then you don't get a full plate. And it's just very hard to study and work 5 days a week. And I could have preached on heaven tonight, but there's lots of things I'm still not sure of. And I'm not going to preach on something that I haven't studied. But it takes a while to study. And so never think that, you know, your pastor should get a job. He can get a job. You can make him go to work. But he's not going to be able to feed you like God's asking to. So ever since this church was organized, its pastor has been full-time. Okay, the songs kind of went along with different aspects of the songs, went along with the message tonight. But I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 32, and we're going to talk to you about Jacob being face to face with God, and how that a real change has come into his life after he'd been saved for a long time and served the Lord. And God's going to deal with him and teach him some lessons. And I think that if we will get this lesson, we also can be changed tonight. Not just being born again, but a new name, a new day. In Genesis chapter 32 and verse 24, we have an account of this man Jacob being left alone with the Lord. And Jacob, in Genesis 32:24, and Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And as you go on down through here, you're going to shortly see that this man was none other than God himself, Jesus Christ. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And so the guy that he's wrestling with reached out and he touched his thigh, and it goes out of joint. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go, except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." And so it's obvious it's not just any man, but it was God himself. And he pressed over passed over Peniel. The sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh and the sinew that shrank. Let me give you a little background of what's happening here. 20 years prior to this time, in Genesis chapter 27, Jacob, the second born son of Isaac and Rebekah. Of course, Isaac is Abraham's son. They go to the Mesopotamia area and gets Rebekah as a wife. Isaac and Rebekah have these two sons, Jacob and Esau. And Esau was the firstborn. And so whenever the time to have the inheritance passed on and the blessings passed on, the firstborn would always get a double portion. And the second would only receive a third if there's just two of them. But Esau was tricked by Jacob by selling his birthright for a bowl of pottage of red beans. When Esau has found out that he has been tricked and that his father has blessed Jacob, Esau says, "The days of mourning of my father are at hand." What he was saying is that my father is getting old, and Isaac was soon going to die, and so he was just going to let things run the course and be normal until he died. And they said, "The days of mourning of my father at hand, then will I slay my brother Jacob." And so it was big family problems. And Esau, who was an ungodly man, Esau who married outside of his parents' wishes, he's upset. Jacob's parents, Rebekah and Isaac, know what has been said, and they urge Jacob to flee down to Padan Aram, back to the Mesopotamia area. And Jacob goes there. He finds his uncle, Laban, his mom's brother, and he serves him for 7 years for a wife. And he's tricked, and he's given the daughter that he doesn't want. He has Leah instead of Rachel. And so he serves 7 more years for Rachel also. So he has Leah and Rachel. And he serves 6 more years in just taking care of the flocks. And while he's there, he has 11 sons and one daughter, and he's going to have a 12th son when he gets back to Israel. There in Padan Aram, he's gained much wealth. He was very shrewd about how the animals were bred, and he made a deal with his father-in-law to take the speckled animals, and he made sure that they were bred by speckled bucks. He's a very keen man in business. And his father-in-law understands what's happening, and animosity begins. And after 20 years, he is told of God to go back to the promised land, to go back to Palestine, go back to Israel. In going, he's going to have to face a confrontation with God. And we read about this. It's going to be a confrontation with God that changes his name, as we read there. That his name is going to be changed in verse 28. The name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. The name Jacob means a supplanter or a trickster. And the name Israel means God commands or God prevails. And if we're ever going to have a name change spiritually, if we're ever going to live lives that are going to be blessed and used of God, we need to come to a similar point in life that Jacob came to in these verses. And so let's note what's taking place here. First of all, we see that Jacob comes to a time of tremendous distress. He's on his way back. In verse chapter 32 and verse 3, look with me there. He's getting close to his homeland. And Jacob sent messages before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir and the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau, thy servant Jacob saith thus, and I have sojourned with Laban, and stayed there until now, and I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my Lord that I may find grace in thy sight." And so he knows that the last words that he heard from his brother was, "When dad dies, I'm going to kill you." And so not being a dummy, he sends some messengers ahead. He wants them to go and find his brother Esau, and he wants them to find out what's happening. In verse 6, "And the message returned to Jacob, saying, We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee with 400 men with him. And Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and the herds and the cattle into two bands, and said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. But note there that verse 7, he was greatly afraid and distressed. I mean, he's come to a point where, I mean, he's between a rock and a hard spot. He's fearful. He's wondering what can happen. He fears for his family being killed. He fears for the loss of his wealth and his herds and flocks, which he had served for 20 years. No doubt he feared even for his own life, because the last words, as we said, was that he'd heard that Esau had said that I'm going to kill him. Now, what you see here is that from time to time in our lives, either at this moment or in the past or in the future, God's going to put you in a pressure cooker. There's going to be times of distress. There's going to be times maybe you even fear for your life. And distress is an instrument of God to bring us to a place where he can work with us. That nothing really comes into our life that doesn't pass the okay of God. When I was pastor, I often looked at stressful events in the lives of others much differently than they were looking at it. And I'm sure you look at my distress much differently than the way you look at it. But my concern as a pastor was not so much what people were going through, but what was God trying to work through this. That nothing comes to our life that's not designed by God. And so I want you to note here his prayer in this time of distress. In verse 9, and Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saith unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and all thy truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I become two bands. And so he's referring when he went and left, and he just only had a staff in his hand. But now he's come back, and he's got so many people and servants and family that he says there are two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou hast said, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And so what we find here is some very significant things. You see, when he says here in verse 9, when he says, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, what he's saying, he's reminding God and reminding himself, as though God didn't need to be reminded, but the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God had made a covenant with Abraham that in him all the nations of the world would be blessed. And so when Jacob approaches God, he approaches God on a covenant relationship. Not saying, you know, God, you need to bless me, or approach God not even as a creator. He didn't approach God even as a friend. But he approached God on this covenant relationship. If you look back in chapter 28 and verses 13 and 14, in chapter 28, verses 13 and 14 of Exodus, and behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Well, what's happening here, that God is speaking to Jacob, and this is where he's the ladder, where he saw the ladder of the angels, of the people coming up and going down, and God says to them, listen, I'm a covenant God. I will bless thee, and this land is going to be yours. And so when he approaches God, he approaches it on a covenant relationship. He prayed, holding the promises of God. He said, God, you told me to return to this country in verse 9. He's humble in his prayers in verse 10. I'm not worthy of the least of all thy mercies. And he's pleading the promises of God. And he says, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant, for with thy staff I passed over." And he's just reminding God of his promises. And so when we come to a time of distress, we ought to approach God in a covenant way. That is, that Jesus Christ went to the cross and the promise was made. Those who put their trust in the shed blood of Jesus Christ enter into a covenant relationship. When we become the children of God, we obtain forgiveness of sin. We're going to have heaven. And so we ought to approach God that way. God doesn't owe the lost man anything. And he comes claiming a definite promise when we're in distress. We ought to say, Lord, you've promised that if any man lack wisdom, we ask of God, you'll give it to us liberally. Maybe when the time of distress, we could pray, you say in Hebrews that you'll not leave us or forsake us. But he pleaded a promise, and he acknowledged his unworthiness, and his motives seemed to be right, because he said there in verse 12, and thou sayest, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And so he's just reminding God of his promises. And so just to kind of summarize what we've said so far, that don't be afraid of distressing times. God works through distressing times. 400 men in Esau who said, I'm going to kill that guy, is coming down the road. And he has all these people, his family, his children, his wives, his flocks, his servants. He declares his own unworthiness. He reminds God of his promises. But I want to, secondly, for you to see here that although all this is good, something still seems amiss. Think and fish someplace. Something's still wrong. Let me show you this. In verse 13, and he lodged there that same night and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother, 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats and 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 sea-asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hands of his servants, every drove by themselves. And he said unto his servants, pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau my brother meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee, then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. So he's decided, this is what I'll do. I'll just select out a bunch of animals. I'm going to have 200 goats, and that would go in a drove, 200 ewes, and that would go, and 20 rams, and then his milk camels, and 40 kine, and 10 bulls, and 20 asses, and 10 foals. And so he had his men start down the road toward where Esau was at, and he had to put a division, maybe 100 yards, maybe 200 yards, maybe a quarter of a mile between. And they're going to meet Esau. He's still conniving. He's still working. He's still figuring it out. He's still trying to cover his bases. He's still giving the commands. You see there in verse 17. And he commanded. He's still in the driver's seat. He's not asking God, what should I do? He's taking control. He's commanding. And then look what it says in verse 18. Then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. When they ask, whose animals are thee? They're to tell Esau, they're thy servants Jacob's. And then he says, and it's a present sent unto my lord Esau. Well, I want you to go back to chapter 25 with me. Go back to chapter 25 and verse 23. And this is when Jacob and Esau were about to be born in the womb of Rebekah. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And then look over in chapter 27 and verse 29. In chapter 27 and verse 29, it says, let people serve thee, he's talking to Jacob, let people serve thee and nations bow down to thee, be lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curseth thee, and blessed be him that blesses thee. And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out of the presence of Isaac, his father Esau, his brother came, and from his hunting. Well, when he stole the blessing, Esau had said to him, you know, let nations come from thee, let the nations bow down to thee, be lord over thy brethren. And then when Esau come in, he said, Father, you know, take it back. Isaac said, what I've said, I've said. So what I want to point out here is that he said, your brother's going to serve you, and you're going to be lord over nations. And so when he sent the men down there and say, thy servant Jacob has brought these, and then he said, Lord Esau, it was directly out of God's will. Never was he to be a servant to Esau, and never was he to be have Esau lorded over him. And so he's maneuvering. He's trying to take care of things his own way. Now let me show you the result of that. Look at chapter 32 and verse 20. It says, and so he commanded there in 19, and he told him to space himself. And he said in verse 20, and he said, and say ye, moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I'll appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure he will accept of me. A very interesting word, peradventure. He's done all this, and then he says, peradventure, what he's saying is, if I send all these animals and tell him I'm coming, call him Lord, say I'm his servant, and he said, perhaps, possibly, it might work out, it could be that he accepts me. Well, let me remind you that God doesn't work in peradventure. Best shot that Jacob could take was still iffy. Now listen, there's going to come distressing times in your life. And the things you set your heart on may not seem to be coming. And you know what? We can push and push and push and maneuver and maneuver and maneuver, and it's still an iffy situation. If we're going to be blessed, we need to surrender. God brings us to distressing times to surrender. The Bible says, commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. Proverbs says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not to thy own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Hebrews says, but without faith it's impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. I'm not saying that God doesn't give us direction and we get up and do things, but I am saying that Jacob never once in all this right to this point, Jacob never once has asked God, what should I do? Remember when David came back to Ziklag, where his family was at, and the Amalekites had invaded and took their family, his family and all of his men's family, and they were weeping. David didn't say, get your guns, boys, or get your swords, we'll pursue after him. David fell on his face and said, Lord, what should we do? And so without faith, it's impossible to please God. You can do a lot of things without faith. You can get married without faith. You can buy a house without faith. You can begin a business without faith. You can do almost anything without faith. But you'll not please God without faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. And so here, Jacob's prayer was right, but there was no surrendered heart. Jacob's was pushing and maneuvering and commanding. And so he sent these men forward. He's hoping, peradventure, that they'll accept him. In chapter 32, verse 21, "So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jacob. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had." And then verse 24. "And Jacob was left alone." He's on the one side of the river. His family and everything else is on the other side of the river. And he's left alone. And there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. Well, we pointed out to you that this man, verse 30, was God, Jesus Christ. To be left alone with no one but God is the only way for us to really see who we are. And in the light of His Word, to let it shine in the deep recesses of our hearts. You see, we can go through all the motions and say the right prayer, and even say that we're doing it for the right reason. Still be pushing and maneuvering. It's alone with God when we come to the realization of who God is and who we are in comparison. Probably one of the hardest verses in the Bible to follow is Psalms 46:10. "Be still and know that I am God." There's a guy that has come a couple of times to our prison services named Adam Bloom. Adam Bloom stole a debit card out of my desk in the old building and charged probably nearly $20,000 on our debit card. And he's got ADD big time. He can't sit still. He'll come and he'll be there for a little bit, and he wants to listen and he wants to come because he feels bad about what he did to our church. And he can't be still. And I think a lot of times we're that way. When it comes to spiritual things, we're attention deficit disorder. And there's a reason for that. Because it's when we're alone with God that the real thoughts and intents of our hearts are revealed. It's alone with God that we understand that He hath made us and not we ourselves, and we are His people and the sheep of His pasture. It's alone with God when we realize that the Lord is in His holy temple and we should be silent before Him. It's when we're alone with God that we realize, like Solomon, that Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all is in heaven and in earth, and in Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and Thou art exalted as head above all. It's alone with the Lord that we may have to cry out as Isaiah, "Woe is me, for I'm undone." It's alone with God that He's able to search me and try me and see if there be any wicked way. But let me say to you that it's alone with God where the wrestling match begins. Look what it says here. "And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day." Now, what I want you to understand, I think this is often preached wrong. Jacob is not wrestling with this individual. He's not wrestling with what turns out to be God, so his prayers would be answered. He's wrestling to see who's going to be dominant. Now, I think that this is the reason why sometimes, more times than I want to admit, that I don't get alone with God. Because when you get alone with God, there's going to be a surrendered heart or you're going to wrestle. A lot of times we don't go to the Lord in prayer because a wrestling match. You see, God's going to be boss. God is going to be Lord, or we're going to wrestle. When alone with God, an unsurrendered heart will always face a battle. God must and God will have the preeminence. When we remain on the throne of our life, when we're still maneuvering, when we're still manipulating, when we're not surrendered and come to the place, Lord, whatever you want me to do, then there's going to be wrestling. We often spend little time in prayer because we do not like the battle that calls for a yielded heart. Now, what I find amazing here is the long-suffering of God in this matter. We're wrestling until the breaking of the day is coming. In verse 25, when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. What we find here is these two men are wrestling. They wrestle and 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 they wrestle. And Jacob is not saying, okay, I give up. He's wrestling. He's maneuvering. He's wrestling. And finally, God simply reaches out and touches. Listen, it wasn't a full Nelson. It wasn't a body slam. He just reached out and touched him. And he was lame. God could have did it in the first 5 seconds. But he didn't. He was long-suffering. But he reached out and touched him. And now, he's lame. I've preached this here before. But his maneuvering is over, isn't it? Because he's got the Chris Ledget syndrome. There's 400 men coming. They saw his brother. He said he's going to kill him. And he's going to meet him. He can't hide. He can't run. He can't fight. Now, let me say this as kindly as I can. But if you're here tonight and you're not surrendered, it's my prayer that God would put you in a place where you can't run and you can't hide and you can't fight, even if it means physically disabling you. Because you see, listen, we got a name change coming. He's going to be changed from God Prevails to God, from the supplanter to God Prevails. And so what can he do? He can't wrestle. So what he does is he gets a hold of God and he just clings to God. Come to the place and I say, Lord, I don't know what to do about my son Toby. I don't know what to say. There's lots of things I want to say. I want to turn him over and spank his bottom. And all I can do, Lord, is just cling to you. Lord, I don't know what I'm going to do about this job situation. You know the problems in it. You know the difficulties in it. You know what's happening. I can't change it. I'm just going to cling to you. Lord, I don't know what to do about this relationship with this person I have and how it's went south. I'm just going to cling to you. I don't know what to do about this church problem, Lord. I'm just going to cling to you. And he prevailed. He prevailed not in the wrestling, but he prevailed in the clinging. Now, some of you, maybe older men, maybe younger men, maybe older women, maybe younger women. Some of you may be here tonight and you're still pushing, you're still maneuvering, you're still calling the shots, you're still making it. And you may even be so far into it that you say, you know what, I can't back out now. I mean, even Jacob was kind of there, all these animals going down the road, I can't back out now. You need to surrender. Just cling. If you're not saved here tonight, you just need to cling to the Lord. But if you're saved, you need to come to the place to understand that when we get alone with God, I mean, we have prayer here every Saturday, and we have different prayer meetings and stuff, but, you know, we can come to prayer meeting, and we can say all the words, and we can go through all the things, and we can repeat the request, and we can cry out to God. But you know what God is more concerned with than you praying for the request that they've written down? It's not wrong to make plans, not wrong to set out and set your course in life. God didn't call us to be a bump on the log. God didn't call us to say, Lord, you said you'd feed us like you feed the birds and set on a fence post and open our mouth and expect God to drop food in it. God wants us to work. But God wants surrender. Now, the issue is when you're left alone. It's just you and God. You're left alone, and we can say a little quick prayer and flip on the TV or go get the computer and get distracted and go on. But we can be still and know that He's God. We can be still and lay it out before Him. We can say, Lord, search me and try me and see if there be any wicked way in me. Lord, you're the center of my life. Are we together? Understand what I'm saying? And what you don't understand until you do that is, man, there is such freedom in surrender. I don't like fights. Maybe when I was young, I did. Susie always says I was a bully when I was in Fossil. We're the bullies on the east side of town or whatever side of town we lived on. I don't think there was an east side and a west side in Fossil. It was just Fossil. It's no fun to wrestle with God. It's no fun to wrestle and not win. But this is God. And if we're going to prevail, we need to surrender. Does God have the permission from you tonight to take you and put you in New York City? He has the permission tonight to take you and do whatever He wants to with you. Does He own your possessions? All serious questions. Let me tell you, from experience, if you keep wrestling with the Lord, Father, tonight we're glad for the example that we find in your word. We're glad for the example of surrender. May you have your will and way in our lives. Lord, many things that distress us and fear us and, Lord, disturb us and bounce us off of our plans. But I pray for each of your children here tonight, for wives, for mothers, for husbands and fathers, for single individuals, May they know the peace and the joy. May your grace be sufficient for each of us tonight.